pressure. The Search. Talks on the 10 Bulls of Zen. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 9.
Bhagwan, reaching the source. Too many steps have been taken returning to the root and the source. Better to have been blind and deaf from the beginning. Dwelling in one's true abode, unconcerned with that without, the river flows tranquilly on and the flowers are red. In the world, barefooted and naked of breast, I mingle with the people of the world. My clothes are ragged and dust-laden, and I am ever blissful. I use no magic to extend my life. Now, before me, the trees become alive.
Sat Prem came to me last night. Vipassana is on her deathbed. He was very much worried, shaken, immensely shaken, and rightly so. The moment of death of someone you have loved deeply brings your own death into your mind. The moment of death is a great revelation. It makes you feel impotent, helpless. It makes you feel that you are not. The illusion of being disappears. He was crying. He is not a man to cry easily. He is not a man to feel easily helpless. Tears will not come him. But he was shaken. Anybody will be shaken. Because suddenly you see that the ground underneath the feet has disappeared. You cannot do anything. Somebody is dying you loved. You would like even to give your life, but you cannot. Nothing can be done. One simply waits in deep impotence. That moment either can make you depressed, that moment either can make you sad, or that moment can send you on a great journey of for truth, a great journey in the search of the bull. What this life is, if death comes and takes it, what this life is, what meaning it carries, if one is so impotent against death. And remember, only Vipassana is not on her deathbed. Everybody is on his or her deathbed. After birth, everybody is on his deathbed. There is no other way. All beds are death beds. Because after the birth, only one thing is certain, and that is death. You are also dying, not only Vipassana. Maybe you are in the queue, a little farther away. But that is only a question of time. Somebody dies today, somebody tomorrow, somebody day after tomorrow. What's the difference basically? Time cannot make much difference. Time can only create an illusion of life. But the life that ends in death is not and cannot be the real life. It must be a dream. I would like you to become aware of it. Then your search for the bull starts. The search for the bull is the search for the real life, the authentic life which knows no death. Life is authentic only when it is eternal. Otherwise, what is the difference between a dream and what you call your life? In the night, deep asleep, the dream is as true as anything, as real. Even more real than what you see with open eyes. By the morning, it is gone. Not even a trace is left. In the morning, when you are awake, you see it was a dream and not a reality. This dream of life continues for a few years. Then suddenly one is awakened, and the whole life proves to be a dream. Death is a great revelation. If there was no death, there would have been no religion. It is because of death religion exists. It is because of death that a Buddha was born. All Buddhas are born because of the realization of death. Buddha passed the street and he came across a dead man. He asked his servant, the driver who was taking him in the chariot, "What has happened to this man? What has happened to this man?" And the charioteer could not lie. He wanted to lie. That's what we are doing to each other. He wanted to lie, this young prince. Why unnecessarily disturb him? He is so young now. Why he should be bothered about death? The story is beautiful. It says he was just going to lie and avoid and give some explanation or other. Guards in the heaven watched. They immediately came into his being. They possessed him. The truth must be spoken. Otherwise, this Gautam Siddhartha will miss. They forced the driver to speak the truth. And in spite of himself, the driver found himself saying that this man is dead and everybody is going to be like that, even you, sir. Even I, Buddha asked, then take me back home. Then there is nowhere to go. Then this whole life is false. I must not waste my time. Then I must seek the eternal. That is the search for the bull. Go sit by the side of Vipassana. Feel death. Don't feel sorry for her. If you feel sorry for her, you miss the whole point. You miss a great opportunity, a great door. Don't feel sorry for her. There is no need to feel sorry for her. She is perfectly beautiful. She is leaving this world with something gained inside. The day she had come to me, I had become apprehensive and aware that her breathing was not right. Hence the name Vipassana. Vipassana means awareness of breath. And I had told her to be as much aware of her breath as possible. She was going to die. When? That is not important. And she was going to die by some deep breathing trouble. Her breathing was not rhythmic, but she worked hard. And I am happy that she is dying with a certain integration. So she is not dying uselessly. Don't feel sorry for her at all. You can, on the contrary, feel happy for her. She worked hard. And whatsoever she has attained, she is going to carry in her other life. She has used this opportunity as well as possible. So whether she survives or dies is immaterial. When you go and sit by her side, feel sorry for yourself. You are on the same boat, in the same plight. Death will knock any day on your door. Be ready. Before death comes, find out the bull. Before death knocks, come back home. You should not be caught in the middle. Otherwise, this whole life disappears like a dream. And you are left in tremendous poverty, inner poverty. The search for the bull is the search for the energy, the eternal energy, the very dynamic energy of life. It knows no death. It passes through many deaths. Each death is a door for a new formation. Each death is a cleansing. Each death is an unburdening. Each death simply relieves you of the old. The life, the real life, never dies. Then who dies? You die. The I dies. The ego dies. Ego is part of death. Life is not. So if you can be egoless, then there is no death for you. If you can drop the ego consciously, you have conquered death. And in the search for the bull, the only thing that has to be done is dropping the ego by and by. If you are really aware, you can drop it in a single step. If you are not so much aware, you will have to drop it gradually. That depends on you. But one thing is certain, the ego has to be dropped. With the ego disappears death. With the ego, death is also dropped. So go and sit by the side of Vipassana. Soon she will disappear. Don't feel sorry for her. Feel sorry for yourself. Let death surround you. Have the taste of it. Feel helpless, important. Who is feeling helpless and who is feeling important? The ego. Because you see, you cannot do anything. You would like to help her and you cannot. You would like to survive, that she survives, but nothing can be done. Feel this impotence as deeply as possible, and out of this helplessness, a certain awareness, a prayerfulness, a meditation will arise. Use her death, it is an opportunity. Here with me, use everything as an opportunity. She has used her life beautifully. I can say her goodbye very happily, so that she can come back soon. She will be coming on a higher plane, and this death is going to help her, because with this body more work is not possible now. Whatsoever she could work, she has done it. A new, fresh body will be needed for further work. And she is not fighting. She is not struggling. She is simply surrendering by and by. And that's beautiful. She is in a let go. If she fights, she may survive for a few days more. That's why doctors are not going to be of much help, because she herself is accepting death. And when somebody accepts death, then nothing can help, because the person deep down is ready to die. And that's beautiful, that one is ready to die. Because one is ready to die only when one has come to feel something which is beyond death, never before. When one has come to feel the taste of deathlessness, a little glimpse maybe, but one knows that one is not going to die. One is going to die, and yet one is not going to die. When one comes to know that, then one relaxes. Then where is the fight? What is the point? One relaxes. She is relaxing. By and by she will disappear. Use that opportunity. Be by the side. Sit silently. Meditate. Let her death become a pointer to you, so that you don't go on wasting your life. The same is going to happen to you. Reaching the source, the 9th sutra. Too many steps have been taken, returning to the root and the source. Better to have been blind and deaf from the beginning, dwelling in one's true abode, unconcerned with death without. The river flows tranquilly on and the flowers are red. Too many steps have been taken. In fact, there was no need to take so many steps. But this is realized only when you have come on the 9th point. When you are reaching home, then you will realize that this was possible in a single step. There was no need to take so many steps. There was no need to move so gradually in degrees. Jump was possible. People come to me and I tell them to take the jump. They say, but they will have to think. How can you think for a jump? And if you think and you come to a decision by thinking, how it is going to be called a jump then? A jump is a jump in the unknown, unthought, uncontemplated, unplanned. A jump cannot be planned. You cannot prepare for it. You cannot think pros and cons. You cannot be the decider. A jump is going out of the ego, doing something which has not been decided by the ego. A jump is allowing the whole to take possession of you. A jump is discontinuous with you. It is not a continuity. If you think and then you come to a decision, it is a continuity. You may take sannyas then, but this will be a first step in a long series. The sannyas that I was hoping for you was a single step. In one step, you would have arrived home. But you wanted to think, I can understand your problem also. How can you take something without thinking? How can you be so trusting? A jump needs trust. You cannot trust. You doubt. You have been trained for doubt. You have been trained to think all the possibilities before you decide. You have been trained always to remain in control. You can take sannyas as a conclusion of your own thinking, then it is a continuity. The sannyas I was going to give you was more like death or love. You cannot think about love, it happens. That's why we have in all the languages the expression falling in love. It is a fall. Fall from the ego. Fall from the head. Fall from the control. Fall from the continuity. Yes, it is a fall. You are no more part of your thinking. Continuity. Suddenly a gap appears. Or it is like death. You cannot do anything about it. It comes. It possesses you. It is not your decision. But one day when you will be coming nearer and nearer home, just the home will be in front of you. Then you will realize too many steps have been taken. Returning to the root and the source. Better to have been blind and deaf from the very beginning. That is the meaning of trust. Better to have been blind. And better to have been deaf from the very beginning. If you trust, your mind says, you are becoming a blind believer. Don't be blind. Think about it. Take time. Then make the decision. Everything should be your decision. Have you ever thought about it, that your birth was not your decision? Nobody had asked in the first place. And even if somebody wanted to ask, you were not there to be asked. Your birth came out of the unknown, out of nothingness. You were born. It was not your decision. One day, you will disappear again into the unknown. That will be your death. That will not be your decision. And in between these two, sometimes there will be glimpses of love. They will be all of the unknown. Or, if you are fortunate enough and you try meditation and prayer, then again you will have few glimpses of the unknown. They will not be something of your doing. In fact, your doing is the barrier. There are things which can be done only by you, and there are things which can be done only when you are not there to do them. There are things which can be done only in a deep non-doing. Birth, death, love, meditation, all that is beautiful happens to you. Remember it. Let it become a constant remembrance. You cannot do these things. Too many steps have been taken, returning to the root and the source. Better to have been blind and deaf from the very beginning. Dwelling in one's true abode, unconcerned with that without, the river flows tranquilly on and the flowers are red. Look at the river, unconcerned with whatsoever is happening all around. It flows on in deep tranquility and deep calmness, undistracted by what is happening on the banks, undistracted. It moves on. It remains tuned to its own nature. It never goes out of its nature. It remains true to itself. Nothing distracts. Nothing calls it away from herself. Whatsoever happens in the world around, the river goes on being a river, true to itself, goes on moving. Even if a war is going on, even if bombs are being thrown, whatsoever is happening, good or bad, the river remains true to itself, goes on moving. Movement is its intrinsic nature, and tranquility is a shadow when you are true to yourself. And watch the flowers on the trees, and the flowers are red. The trees are also true to themselves. No flower is trying in any way to imitate any other flower. There is no imitation, no competition, no jealousy. The red flower is just red and tremendously happy in being red. It has never thought about being somebody else, where man has been missing. Man misses his true nature because of desire, imitation, jealousy, competition. Man is the only being on the earth who is not true to himself, whose river is not in tune with itself, who is always moving somewhere else, who is always looking at somebody else, who is always trying to be somebody else. That's the misery, the calamity. You can be only yourself. There is no other possibility. It simply does not exist. The sooner you understand it, the better. You cannot be a Buddha, you cannot be a Jesus. And there is no need. You can be only yourself. But everybody is trying to be somebody else. Hence we go on away and away from the original source. The distance is created because of the desire. You see somebody moving in a beautiful car and you want the car. Not that that car is needed. Just a moment before, there was no need. Suddenly, seeing somebody else moving in the car, a desire has arisen. If you had not seen the car, the desire would never have arisen. So it is not intrinsic to you, something from the outside. As if the river was moving towards the ocean, and just on the bank, the river has seen something. And the flow is broken, and the river does not want to go to the ocean now. Now on this bank, she would like to cling to something, possess something. Now the river has moved away from its intrinsic nature. It has fallen from its trueness, authenticity, from its truth. You see somebody, an athlete, a beautiful body, ornamental, and suddenly a desire arises. You would like to have the same body. You would like to become Muhammad Ali, the greatest. Or you see a beautiful man or a beautiful woman and you would like to become like that. Or you see a Buddha, a tranquility of great understanding, and you would like to become like him. Remember one thing, you can be only yourself, there is no other way. All other ways are simply leading you away from yourself. Once you realize this, the basic understanding has been achieved. And then immediately your river starts flowing. There are no blocks. People come to me and they said they have so many blocks here and there. And all blocks exist because of deep-rooted desires to be something else than you can be. All blocks exist. Energy becomes frozen. Because the energy knows only one way to flow. That's its natural flow. Just think of a rose who has become neurotic and thinks to become a lotus. Now, what will happen? There will be simply misery. And in that misery, the rose will not be able to become a rose. One thing is certain. The rose cannot become a lotus. That is absolutely certain. The rose will not be able to become a rose. That too is almost certain. Because now the whole desire will be going far away. The rose will dream of the lotus. And the rose will think of the lotus. And the rose will start condemning itself. How can you grow if you condemn yourself? The rose will not be able to love itself. How can you grow if you cannot love yourself? The energy will not be flowing. Now there will be blocks. Now the rose will be constantly in trouble. One day there is a headache, another day there is something else. The rose is ill. Once the rose comes to understand that there is only one possibility, and that is to be a rose, and there is no need to be a lotus, and it is perfectly beautiful to be a rose, Once the rose accepts itself and the condemnation disappears, once the rose loves itself, the grace returns. The dignity is back. Now there are no blocks. They will melt. The rose will start flowing like a river. The rose will be red, happy, tremendously delighted in whatsoever is naturally available to it. Roses never go neurotic. They laugh at men. Lotuses never go neurotic. The whole world laughs at men. Man is the only animal who goes neurotic. And the neurosis arises once you are trying to do something unnatural to yourself. The neurosis arises. Once you have an ideal, you are going to be neurotic. You are the ideal. You are the destiny. Dwelling in one's true abode, that means being just to oneself, not trying to be anybody else. Unconcerned with that without, the river flows tranquilly. And the flowers are red. The prose comment. From the beginning, truth is clear. Poised in silence, I observe the forms of integration and disintegration. One who is not attached to form need not be reformed. The water is emerald, the mountain is indigo, and I see that which is creating and that which is destroying. From the beginning, truth is clear. From the beginning, truth is not hidden. From the beginning, the truth is just in front of you. From the beginning, there is nothing else than the truth. Something has gone wrong with you, not with the truth. People come to me and they ask, why God is invisible? I tell them, He is not. You are blind. Don't say God is invisible. God is the all that surrounds you within and without. God is not invisible. You have lost the capacity to see. God is here now. God is all that is. God is just a name for the totality, the whole. In millions of forms He is visible. In the flowing river He is the flow. In the red flower He is the redness. God is not invisible. Somehow, either you have gone blind or you have become too much attached to your blinkers. You remain blindfolded. Your religions, your culture, your society, your conditionings, the civilization and all nonsense just functions as a blindfold. You are not allowed to open your eyes. You have become accustomed to live with closed eyes. You have completely forgotten that you have eyes and you can open them. You have become so afraid of opening your eyes, of seeing the truth. You have become so attuned with lies that to see truth is going to be very devastating. Your whole image will fall down, will be shattered. Your whole house of playing cards will simply come down and disappear. You have lived too much in dreams and desires, and you have become deep down afraid of the real. Don't say God is invisible. God is absolutely visible here and now. From the beginning, truth is clear. Then where man goes astray? In trying to be something else, in trying to be somebody else, in trying to fulfill some ideals, in trying to go into the future and to become somebody, the ego trip leads you astray. Drop all ideals. Drop all ideas how you should be. The should is the greatest poison there is. Just live naturally. This is the uniqueness of Zen. It gives you no ideals. It helps you to be natural. It gives you no images so that you have to follow them and imitate them. Zen masters say, even if you meet Buddha on the way, kill him immediately. And if you utter the name of Buddha, rinse your mouth. They know the exact message of Buddha. They have understood. Hence, they can be so harsh. They look hard, they are not harsh. They say you can be only yourself. So no imitation should be allowed. You should destroy all seeds for imitativeness. Otherwise you will become a falsity. You will be a phony being. Just be yourself. There is no other goal to be attained. Live alert, delightfully, and everything will be as it should be. There is no need to think about the should. Truth will follow you like a shadow. Just you settle down. Relax in your naturalness. Be spontaneous. Be natural. Don't live according to rules. Let the rules come out of your naturalness. Zen is the natural religion of man. It is almost religionless religion. Godless religion. It is beyond ordinary morality. From the beginning, truth is clear. Poised in silence, I observe the forms of integration and disintegration. If you simply remain natural, you become a witness. A desire arises. It integrates. You remain a witness. As it integrates, the same way it disintegrates itself, you need not do anything. Just like a wave arises in the ocean and falls back. No need to do anything. No need to fight. No need to struggle. Forms arise and disappear. You remain a watcher. And you know well that no form is identical with you. You are not identified with any form. You were a child. That form came and disappeared. If you meet your childhood somewhere, you will not be able to recognize it. You became young. That form also disappeared. Now if you go and meet somewhere your youth, you will not be able to recognize it. You became old. That form will also disappear in death. Forms go on like waves. Come and go. Appear and disappear. No need to be distracted by them. Anger comes and goes. Nothing is to be done about it. If you can remain poised in your alertness, it cannot poison you. You remain aloof, close, very close and yet aloof, far, far away. You remain in the midst of the forms and yet you remain alert that no form is identical with your being. Your being is irreducible to any form. Your being is pure awareness. It is just awareness with no forms. Poised in silence, I observe the forms of integration and disintegration. One who is not attached to form need not be reformed. This is beautiful. One who is not attached to the form need not be reformed. First you get attached with the form of anger, or greed, or jealousy, or possessiveness, or whatsoever. First you get identified with the form of anger, then the question arises, how to drop it? How to attain to non-anger? First you become attached with the form of greed and then you start inquiring how to be non-greedy. Now reform is needed. And this is going into circles. Zen says in the first place, why be identified with any form? Rather than trying to make anger non-anger, violence non-violence, greed non-greed, why not get out of the identification in the first place? Watch the anger, don't get identified with it. Suddenly, you are neither angry nor non-angry. Neither violent nor non-violent. You are the watcher. The violence and the non-violence both are forms on the screen. You are the spectator. You have gone beyond. Now no reform is needed. Try to understand this basic, very basic thing. Zen doesn't teach you that you should practice brahmacharya. No. It simply says, don't get identified with the form of sex. The real thing is to be done there. Once you are identified with the form of sex, then you are in a vicious circle. The first step has been taken wrongly. Now you cannot arrive home. The first step has to be put right. So there is no need now to go to a saint and take a vow of brahmacharya. Your brahmacharya is going to be dangerous. It will be nothing but a repression. And you will get more and more miserable. And sex will become more and more powerful. It will fascinate you more. It will attract you more. You will start living a very perverted life of sex. On the outside brahmacharya, deep inside the turmoil. Zen says, don't be worried about brahmacharya. You just don't get identified with the form of sex. When the desire for sex arises, be a watcher. Don't condemn it. Because if you condemn, you cannot be a watcher. You have become a party. Then you cannot be impartial. You are already prejudiced. Don't condemn it. Don't judge it. Just remain alert with no judgment, because all judgments are a subtle forms of identification. If you say it is bad, you are already identified. You are already angry against it. It has taken possession of you already. It has entered in you. If you say good, of course, you are getting identified. Don't say good or bad. Just don't say anything. Can you remain alert when anger arises, sex arises, greed arises, without saying yes or no? Can you resist the temptation of saying yes or no? Just alert, taking note of it, it is there, with no judgment. And you have got the key. That is the Zen key. It is a master key. It unlocks all the locks there are. One who is not attached to form need not be reformed. The water is emerald. The mountain is indigo. And I see that which is creating and that which is destroying. There is no problem really for a man of Zen. Because he looks at things and accepts their naturality. The water is emerald. What is the problem? The mountain is indigo. What is the problem? A flower is a flower, a thorn is a thorn. Things are what they are. What is the problem? The problem arises when you start evaluating them. You say, if the water was not emerald, it would have been better. Now the problem arises. If you say, if the mountains were not indigo, it would have been better. Now, you are getting into trouble. The water is emerald. The mountains are indigo. Accept the fact. Live with the fact and don't bring theories. Just go on watching your mind. It brings theories continuously. It does not allow you to accept anything. It goes on thinking it should not be so. It should be so. It goes on bringing imagination. Watch, where is the problem? Things are as they are. And if you accept this, if you understand this, there is nothing else to be done. You are back home. Then you go on watching and you go on enjoying. The scene is beautiful. The scene is tremendously beautiful. But don't bring yourself in it. With your evaluation, judgment, the ego enters. The child is restless, running all around. It has to be so. He is a child. Now you want him to sit silently. You want him to behave like an old man. The problem has arisen. Now you can't see that the child is a child. Now you are trying to make him into something else which he is not. Now you will be in trouble, and you are creating trouble for the child also. Accept it. Dogs are barking and you are meditating. Now don't say that they are disturbing you. They are not concerned at all with you. They don't know even that you are meditating. They are dogs. And barking is their meditation. You enjoy your meditation, let them enjoy their meditation. Once you accept, suddenly the problem disappears. But deep down you go on evaluating. It would have been good if these dogs were not barking. But why they should not bark? They are dogs and they are so tremendously enjoying it. Just accept the fact, and you will see the more you accept, the more their barking becomes non-destructive. Then suddenly they go on barking and you go on meditating, and there is no clash. The clash arises out of your mind and attitude. Everything is in its nature. You be also in your nature. And the world is perfectly good. The world is perfectly beautiful. It is the best world there can be. The 10th sutra in the world. The 9th is reaching the source. But whenever you reach the source, the circle has to become complete. I was reading a small anecdote. Who made God? Asked a small 8-year-old child. God has no beginning or end, answered the teacher. But everything has a beginning or end, insisted the boy. Another 8-year-old tried to help. Where is the beginning or the end of a circle? He asked. I see, said the first child. If the life is really complete, the circle has to come back to the very first step. Then the circle has to become complete. That was what was missing before Kakuan. The Taoist pictures ended with the 8th. But Kakuan felt, and he felt rightly, that the circle is not complete. Something is missing. A man starts in the world. He must end in the world. Then only the circle is complete and the man is perfect. In Zen they have a saying that before I entered on the path, rivers were rivers and mountains were mountains. The deeper I went on the path, I became confused. Rivers were now no more like rivers, and mountains were no more like mountains. Everything became topsy-turvy, upside down. It was a chaos. And when I reached to the end and the path was complete, again rivers became rivers, mountain became mountains. It has to be so. You start in the world is the given. Wherever you start in the world. Now, one thing is certain, if the circle is complete and journey full, and you are fulfilled, you must end in the world. In the middle, things will be topsy-turvy. The Siddha, the one who has attained, comes back into the world as an ordinary man. Sometimes you may not be even aware that a Siddha lives just in your neighborhood. That somebody you know is a Siddha and you may not be aware. The circle may be so complete that he will look just like an ordinary man. Because the effort to look like an extraordinary man is still the ego trip. So be careful. You may be passing many Siddhas in the marketplace. And be alert. Just by your side there may be sitting a Buddha who has come full circle. In the East, we bow down to each other in deep remembrance of God. In the West, if you say hello to somebody, you say good morning, good evening. That we don't say in the East. We say Jai Ram. God is great. We recognize the God in the other. We hail the God in the other. Who knows? He may have come full circle. In that deep recognition, we don't talk about the morning or the evening or the afternoon or the night. That is useless. Good night is just a formality. Good morning, just a formality. But when somebody says Jai Ram, I bow down to the God in you, it is not just formality. It has a very tremendous significance. It says, who knows? I am not very alert. And the other person may be Ram, may be God himself. Let me bow down to him. Whenever a Buddha comes full circle, he is back in the world. That is where everybody starts and that is where everybody should end. That is the 10th sutra. Barefooted and naked of breast, I mingle with the people of the world. My clothes are ragged and dust laden, and I am ever blissful. I use no magic to extend my life. Now, before me, the trees become alive. Barefooted and naked of breast. Very ordinary. Just like a beggar. Barefooted and naked of breast, I mingle with the people of the world. This mingling with the people of the world is a great recognition, realization that everybody is divine. So there is no need to go to the Himalayas. There is no need to hide yourself in the seclusion of a monastery. There is no need to keep yourself isolated. Mingling with the people is mingling with God in millions of forms. Barefooted and naked of breast, I mingle with the people of the world. Now the division of the world and nirvana is lost. This world, that division is lost. The profane and the sacred, that division is lost. Now everything is sacred or profane. Because everything is one. Call it the world or nirvana makes no difference. The world is moksha. The world is nirvana. The sayings of Zen masters like this trouble other religious people very much. Zen masters say this world is nirvana. This world is enlightenment, supreme, ultimate. And there is no other world. This troubles, creates anxiety in other religious people. Because they cannot think that the profane can be sacred, that the ordinary can be the extraordinary. That pebbles on the path are diamonds. But it is so. And the Zen insight is absolutely true. The other world is not anywhere else, it is here now. Only you need perception, clarity. When your eyes are clear, pebbles become diamonds. When you attain to clarity, all stones turn into images of God. When you have the realization of your own being, suddenly you have realized the whole. There is no other world. This is the only world there is. But there are two ways of seeing it. One is with blindfolded eyes. It is not good to say that it is a way of seeing. It is a way of not seeing. And then there is another with open, clean, clear eyes. With perceptivity. Then suddenly everything is beautiful. Divine, sacred. Wherever you are moving on holy ground. The holiest of the holies surrounds you. Barefooted and naked of breast, I mingle with the people of the world. My clothes are ragged and dust laden, and I am ever blissful. Again, ordinary. Maybe chopping wood, carrying water from the well, doing ordinary things, cleaning the house, preparing the food, looking after the guests. My clothes are ragged and dust laden. Back to the very ordinariness of life. And I am ever blissful. But wherever I am, bliss surrounds me. Now it is no more something that happens to me. It is something that has become my intrinsic quality. Not that sometimes I am blissful and sometimes not. It has become my nature. I am bliss. Now before me the trees become alive. I use no magic to extend my life. Because there is no question of extending life. One lives eternally. Now there is no death. So what is the point of extending life? Yogis have been very much concerned, almost obsessed, with the idea of extending life, to live long. Deep down in every person the desire is, if somebody comes and says that I have come across a sadhu in the Himalayas who is 150 years of age, suddenly you become interested. Why? What is the difference if he is 50 or 150 or 300? What is the difference? Why you are interested? You are still identified with the body and still afraid of death. I have heard about one sadhu in the Himalayas who used to say that he is 1,000 years old. A Westerner had come to see him from thousands of miles. Just because he had heard that he is 1,000 years old, it is impossible. But maybe things happen in the East. He had come. He watched the man, but he couldn't believe. He looked not more than 60. Few days he watched, but he could not believe that 1,000, at the most 60. Even that was too much. Then he gathered courage and asked one disciple, who seemed to be the chief disciple, that what do you think? Is he really 1,000 years old? The disciple said, I don't know much, because I have been only 300 years with him. And the disciple was not more than 30. But a human mind is stupid. But the attraction has a deep significance. It shows that you are afraid of death and you become interested. If somebody is 1,000 years old, then maybe he can help you also. He can also give you some secret, some alchemical formula, some key, and you can also live long. But Zen is not interested in long life, because Zen says, once you understand yourself, then there is eternal life. Who bothers about long life? Long life is still a desire of the body identified man who is afraid of death. A man of understanding knows there is no death. Death does not happen. It has never happened. It happens only because you are identified with the body and you don't know yourself. Yes, with the body you will be separated. If you are too much identified, that separation looks like death. But if you are not identified with the body and you know yourself as the witnessing soul, as the consciousness, as the awareness, then there is no death. I use no magic to extend my life, but one thing is happening. Now before me the trees become alive, even dead trees. As I pass them, they become alive. A man who has attained to his innermost core of being is so full of life that wherever he moves, he sours his life on everything. It is said when Buddha will move into the forest, dead trees will become alive and trees will blossom out of season. These may be just stories, but significant, mythological, not historical, not true in the sense of history, but is still true in a deeper sense. When you are alive, Whatsoever you touch becomes alive. When you are dead, whatsoever you touch, you kill. Your touch becomes poisonous. The prose comment, inside my gate, 1,000 scissors do not know me. The beauty of my garden is invisible. Why should one search for the footprints of the patriarchs? I go to the marketplace with my bottle and return home with my staff. I visit the wine shop and the market, and everyone I look upon becomes enlightened. Inside my gate, 1,000 sages do not know me. The truth of one's being is so vast that even 1,000 sages cannot know it. It is unknowable. Not only the unknown, it is the unknowable. The more you know it, the more you feel its unknowability. It is a mystery, not a problem to be solved, not a riddle which can be dissolved. It is a mystery which goes on growing bigger and bigger. The more you enter in it, the more mysterious it becomes. It is the very substratum. It is the ultimate. There is nothing beyond it. There is nothing beyond you. You are the very base of existence, the very ground of being. Of course, that very ground cannot become part of knowledge. It is deeper than knowledge. It is deeper than the knower. Inside my gate, 1,000 sages do not know me. The beauty of my garden is invisible. One feels it. One feels it, but one cannot know it. One becomes alert of it, but it is very subtle. You cannot catch hold of it. You can realize it, you can live in it, but you cannot grab it. You cannot cling to it. It is elusive. Why should one search for the footprints of the patriarchs? Now there is no need. Why one should bother about Buddhas, the knowers, the enlightened people? Jesus and Krishna and Lao Tzu, why one should be worried about them? Finished is the search. You have come home. Why one should search for the footprints of the patriarchs? Now there is no need. Once you are back to your innermost nature, there is no need for any scripture, for any doctrine, for any yoga, for any system, for any search. I go to the marketplace with my bottle. Here, Kakuan is unique. Very courageous man. It is very rare to find so courageous men in so-called religious people. Only a really religious person can be so courageous. He accepts the world in its totality. I go to the marketplace with my bottle and return home with my staff. I visit the wine shop and the market, and everyone I look upon becomes enlightened. Now nothing is prohibited. Now nothing is denied. Now there is no no. A great yes surrounds. Everything is included. nothing is excluded. Even the wine sap is not excluded. Nothing is excluded. The yes is all inclusive, total. One becomes so all inclusive, one goes to the market, even to the wine shop. Now in everything one finds God hidden. Now one has no condemnation for anything. The no saying has disappeared totally. And remember, the ego disappears totally only when the no saying disappears totally. If you have some no's still, then you have a hang up. Then still the ego is hiding in subtle ways. It says no, and it feels good. What Kakuans means by this is that now the yes is so total that the temple and the wine shop are the same to me. Now I see God everywhere. Now God is everywhere-ness. And everyone I look upon becomes enlightened. That is the last thing to be remembered. Once you are enlightened, you cannot find a person who is not enlightened. Not that everyone becomes enlightened. But if I see into you, I cannot see anything else. You are enlightened. That's why I go on saying, you are all Buddhas. Buddhahood is your intrinsic nature. The day I looked into myself, that very day, the whole world has become enlightened to me. You may be puzzled, because I can see your confusion. You may be puzzled about your own treasures. You may not be aware, but I can see you are carrying the greatest treasure of life. You are carrying a God within you. You may have forgotten completely. You may have forgotten completely the way how to reach back home, but still it is there. And Kakuan is right. Everyone I look becomes enlightened. If I look at you, you become enlightened. Because for me only enlightenment exists now. Whatsoever you are, you will find the world exactly the same. You go on finding in the world again and again yourself. The world is a mirror. If you are enlightened, you are surrounded by enlightened beings. There is no other way. You are surrounded by an enlightened universe. The whole existence, the rocks and the rivers and the oceans and the stars, all are enlightened beings. It depends on you, where you are. You create your world. If you are miserable, you live in a miserable world. If you are enlightened, you live in an enlightened world. If your energy is celebrating within, the whole becomes a symphony of celebration. You are the world. Enough for today.